Welcome to the Global Marketing Show, the podcast for all things international business. I'm your host, Wendy Pease, president of Rapport International and a translation expert. Come along with me today as we talk to an expert in the global marketing world about facing their biggest fears, hearing about mistakes they made or saw, discussing best practices, and sharing fun travel language and culture stories. So welcome to today's episode of the Global Marketing Show podcast. You're in for a real treat today. We've got Patrick Nunes from Rotary International. And I first met him a few years back when he was a speaker at an industry conference talking about how he took or was key in working with a team of taking Rotary from being reactive on the localization maturity scale to truly being a global organization. And recently, I've talked to a couple of clients of ours that I see are in a similar position at the start of his journey. So I thought it would be wonderful to have him come on today and talk about what worked, what didn't, and how to take it through this process. So welcome, Patrick. I'm honored to have you here today.
Hi, Wendy. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here and talk to you and all your listeners about this.
Oh, thank you. So tell us, what is your position at Rotary and what are you doing these days?
I am at the world headquarters for Rotary International, which is based right outside of Chicago in Evanston. And I'm the director of global communications and design. And our teams in global communications and design deal with content of global relevance. So creating content, localizing content, translating, transcreating content, copy editing content, making sure content, even in English, is of global tone and voice. And we also work with our regional magazines. There are 33 of them around the world, helping co-create and curate content. And on the design side, we work with all the visual representations of our materials, and everything that we do out there visually to make sure everything resonates with our audiences everywhere.
And you started at Rotary back in 2009?
That is correct. I started in 2009.
So take me back then. Rotary was an international organization at the time.
Yes. Rotary was definitely an international organization.
And wait, you know what? Before we jump into that, maybe you should explain what Rotary is, because it's not a secret club or funky handshake organization. It's really an amazing and an impressive organization. So let's talk about that first, just to level set.
Absolutely. Yeah, I thank you for saying that, because actually that's part of what we do today in global communications. We're part of the communications group, and one of our main tasks in the communications group is really to position our brand. And a lot of misinformation or misunderstanding of what Rotary is exists out there, and that's part of our goals, is to kind of position our brand and help people have a better understanding of what Rotary is, besides just the recognition of the name or the brand visually. So the clubs exist everywhere around the world. Rotary started in 1905, and Chicago was the first Rotary club, and it was basically a group of businessmen at the time who got together and started meeting every week to network and socialize, and eventually they found an opportunity to build public bathrooms in Chicago a few years later, which was their first humanitarian project. And eventually one of them moved to another area and started another club in another city, and eventually Rotary moved, or somebody moved out overseas, and Rotary became by nature international, to your point. And that's one thing that I always say, that there are more than 35,000 clubs around the world composed by volunteers, men and women of all walks of life and professional and personal backgrounds. And basically, to summarize in a sentence what Rotary members are, Rotary members are people of action. They are people who get together, they exchange ideas and thoughts, and whenever there's an opportunity to do some good, they would definitely jump on that, either to do good in their own backyard or across the oceans around the world. And there are many programs out there, and we don't have enough time to cover everything. But in a nutshell, Rotary members are people of action who get together to network and connect with their ideas and take action to make the world a better place.
Okay, so if somebody's looking to volunteer, Rotary is a fantastic place to go to build a network and give back.
Absolutely.
Or do good deeds. Good. Okay, so you went to work there in 2009.
That's correct.
And at this point, you were going in to translate, you were going in to manage the department. What did it look like?
I was hired as the team lead for the Portuguese team that at the time was part of what was called Language Services Department. So the Language Services Department had different language teams. So I was hired to be the team lead for Portuguese. So my main, you know, goals there was to oversee mainly translation matters. At the time, we didn't even talk about localization. We called everything translation. And that was my role, to oversee a small group of very talented translators and to turn content into Portuguese at the time. That was my main focus. That's how I started.
All right. And so the company at the time was probably, so why don't you first talk about the localization maturity model so we make sure everybody knows what that is, and then we can talk about where you were on that scale at that time.
Yeah.
And how that transitioned.
Yes. So, and at that time, we didn't even talk about, you know, localization. You know, everything was referred to as translation. And when I started, we had a workflow management system that was built in-house. In 2009, that system was already obsolete in a way. It was, you know, problematic, there were issues, and there was not enough support to really follow what we needed in terms of development of technology. And at the time, we were using Trados as translation memory. And there was no system, no robust system in place for maintenance. So every now and then we would hear that quality was struggling. We all have heard that garbage in, garbage out. So that was no news then. And so we had our own system going on for managing, you know, projects. We had the transition memory at the time, but again, there was no systemic approach to things. There were a few things about the localization maturity model of how their Rotary really was in terms of maturity, in terms of localization. They were in good place. There were a few talks already about how it was very important for us to be involved in the beginning of the process or early on in the process, right? So that was a pain point that was already talked about. There was a lot of effort by leadership at the time to keep having conversations, to include the language services team at the time early on in the process and not as an afterthought. There was, in terms of the budget, that was a very good thing because all the translation budget was centralized into the language services department. So that helped control quality. And mainly the system that we had at the time was mainly reliable and in-house. So basically it was an in-house team of linguists basically for many languages that Rotary operated on as their official languages. And there was some work that was being outsourced every year to individual freelancers. So that was the state of the state when I started in May of 2009. So there were a few things about the localization maturity model that were pointing in the right direction. Some good conversations would happen. And that lasted for a few years while I was there in that role. And I changed roles after that. And we always tried to move the needle a little bit here and there, not very successfully. And there was still a lot of frustration that was repetitive since I had started in 2009.
Okay. So level one on the localization maturity model is really somebody who's not doing translation at all. And they're just, man, I need to get this done. Where do I go? How do I think about quality? How do I, anybody who's bilingual can do it. You were beyond that. You were to level two.
We were level
two. You had some sort of process. You had some internal people, but there was no set process. Technology wasn't working. there wasn't a strategy around it.
Correct.
No formal process. Okay. So correct. You come in and you're level two.
Yeah.
All right. And so then how did you get to level three, and how would you define level three?
Well, for us, I think it was a matter of starting. There was some processes in place at the time. Like you said, look, we're not level one. We did good work, right? So that was one thing that from the beginning, there was no doubt that team delivered, right? So things got done, right? Mm-hmm. And were they the best and most efficient way to get things done? Maybe not. And eventually, very soon after I started, there was a decision made by leadership at the time to, because of quality issues with Trados at the time, they decided to just take away transition memory. So that was quite something for us because it came literally overnight and it was quite a shock and it kind of set us back. So it was interesting. It was an interesting period of time for us because as we kept growing in terms of having conversations, in terms of participation, advocacy or you know, evangelization of what, you know, translation or localization was, that was going really well. But in terms of certain steps that could be put in place, like cleaning up our translation memory or looking at new technology, and there was desire, there was conversation again about we need to have eventually, after a few years, there was conversation about having a new workflow management system. And it was one of those situations where I think at least there was an intent to look at it. So the request of getting a new tool to manage our requests would make the list, but then it would fall off the corporate priorities of projects to invest on, right? So it was one of those that I'm sure a lot of people out there have seen. So it was like that for a few years. And I think we started to get into a level three when we started look at the role that we played differently and started to be more included in certain conversations. So we started to be, you know, to have a seat in certain conversations about corporate-wide projects, right, or enterprise projects. It was nothing official. It was nothing, you know, set in stone. There was a lot of effort from the leadership at the time to really make sure, you know, it was almost, many times we would say, like, it was almost intrusive or invasive because we would find our way in, right? We would, you know, barge into conversations not literally, but in a figurative manner, to be invited to these conversations, right? So I think when we started looking at positioning ourselves as more than service providers, we started looking at the possibility of, I remember one of my roles, I was a supervisor, team lead for Portuguese, then eventually I became a department manager. So we started looking at groups of languages, adding value to conversation. So that conversation, again, it was, the effort was there, the desire was there. And eventually I there was a reorg and my boss at the time told me that, you know, we don't know what to do with you. So my option was, do I tell you to let me go or do I think of what we need? So, and I thought, and I saw an opportunity there to, in terms of interpretation, which was big. We also participate a lot in interpretation for the organization. So I created a position to be a manager of interpretation and quality. So I think we started, you know, touching on level three when we started talking about quality. You know, we developed a quality assurance program that was important, that was, you know, top of mind for people to really look at the work that they did, right? There was no system in place other than just getting emails praising or complaining about the quality of work. So I think we around 2011, 12, I think we were in that, you know, 2 to 3, I would say we would gravitate between levels 2 and level 3. And I think level 3 would become a little bit more apparent when we were, again, more invited to these conversations, more invited to participate in certain aspects of the organization and decision-making, but not in a robust manner. We had a voice, we had a seat at the table, but there was not this understanding, right, per se, of what we were there for, right? We're still, oh, translation, there are still things like, oh yeah, things take a long time to get done because, you know, they have to be translated, right? So that that idea, that mentality, I think we would have, we were having more visibility, but just like the work that we do in communications to help position the brand of Rotary as an organization, we were not doing much, or we're not getting through as much as we would like to position our brand of the value that we could bring to the table. So
now, was it at this point when you also put in a lot of structured policies and procedures?
Not yet. So that was, yeah, so that was, again, we had, the team worked amazingly well. And looking back today, I'm like, wow. And I still tell them, like, I praise them all the time, because with not much of processes and procedures like documented and written, the team always did great work, right? So we were recognized for the work that we're doing, but there was something that was missing, right? That frustration that I mentioned that exists in 2009, by 2011, 12, 13, that was still there, right? Every team meeting we would have, we would hear people saying the same things, right? So the problems that we had is people really don't think it through. People really don't, they come to us last minute. They're not flexible. We have to push back. We have to say no more, right? It was this conversation. That was the buzz sentence, right? We have to say no more. We really have to say no. We really have to push back. We're working very hard. And there was no, for example, clear procedure or process for outsourcing, right? It was more on a personal basis of somebody saying, well, yeah, this project, leadership at the time would say, yeah, this project we'll outsource, or this project we won't outsource, but it was
no
strategy around it.
Yeah, that kind of place into more structure, because that's still level two, maybe three, when you add a little bit of quality in. You haven't made that real step into three. You're laughing.
No, I am, because that's true. And that's why I'm saying, like, would gravitate between the two and three. So there were, again, I think the intention, again, a lot of it relied on the intention, right? I think the intention should become more mature without knowing what that meant, right? We didn't have that scale in front of us. We really didn't have the knowledge about localization maturity model. And people have heard me say this before. And I always say this, because in a way, we were in a bubble. We were in our own bubble. We were
so
under a rock.
How did you break through? How did you break through there? Because you hovered there from, 2009 to probably what, 2018?
Yes. So in 2015, I was managing interpretation and quality, and we had a new chief communications officer that came to work with us. So our group belonged to the communications group, right? So we had a new chief communications officer who was a colleague of ours, who was somebody who came from inside the organization, who knew of all the teams in communications. And one of the first things that he did was to start a listening tour. So he started having one-on-ones with folks. And I remember having my one-on-one with him, and he asked me, so if you were to do anything different with this team, what would you do? And I told him, I'm glad you asked, because I have a few thoughts. And he's like, well, can you share with me? I'm like, well, sure. And I told him simply, like, I think there's a great opportunity for us to really be more than just language services. There is an opportunity for us to really be seen as strategic partners for communications overall at a global scale. And he's like, so if you're talking about structure and you're talking about the team overall, what would you think? I'm like, well, I think that the team can do so much. Again, I think there was, a lot of talent in the team. And I told him, like, and actually, if you look at the in-house team that we have, we have very few actual translators, people who were actually translators by trade. We had people from communications background, from PR background, from, former pilots. We had all kinds of folks, in our team. And I shared, there were a few things that we had started doing before 2015, which was to look, get our feet wet with social media. When social media started its boom in 2010, 2011, we started getting our feet wet, and we did that actually to avoid, for example, Rotary members creating official accounts in social media in different languages. So we got ahead of the game. Like, we have to secure an account, a presence. So that fell into our team. I worked very closely with that. So again, you see things kind of pointing in the right direction, but without a process around it. And I told them, like, you know, I would probably not have language teams. I would look at communications from at a regional level. So I would have regional teams, and I would really train our staff, our in-house team, to really think about, you know, localization from a broader perspective. And that was one thing, again, that was very important to us, that was there since 2009. And I want to mention that, was that translation at the time was never seen as something literal. That was something that was very important to us, even when I started. So we had some autonomy over the content. So we always said, you know, the content, once we get the content gets translated, we own that content. So we have the freedom and the autonomy to localize, you know, to really shift things around and change the flow as we see fit and all that, which a lot of people did not understand, right? In many people's minds, translation was to be, you know, follow the source and be as literal as you can. Mm-hmm. So when I told him that, and he's like, okay, I like that idea, I like that approach. And I'm like, well, we have this copy editing team, which we inherited. I think there's an opportunity to really transform that team to not only look at grammar of English, but also really provide feedback into the voice. What's the voice that we have for this organization, right? We just had gone through a rebranding in 2014 that defined our voice and tone. So I'm like, I think the copy editing team, they can be a good source for guiding people in what good voice is, what good tone is, and to look at English, right? We can't forget English. English should be of global nature, right? We have a lot of people outside of the U.S. who rely on our content, and the content that we create here, because we are in the U.S., is very Americanized in tone and all that. So it was a very quick meeting that I kind of gave him like a quick, you know, vision of what I thought it could be. And he looked at me.
So right now, so you have a new leader in.
Yes.
Who could step back and really say, what do we need for a global communications team? And then you set a vision,
yes,
for translation not being an afterthought, but truly a global organization. So I think that's really interesting. That doesn't apply just to a large company or a large organization that has a global reach, but for any company, even if it's small or medium,
absolutely,
have a leader that can set a vision and work towards that.
Yes, that was crucial. And I think that, and if it was not for that meeting, we probably wouldn't be where we are today, because it came and all it was the curiosity, right? Somebody who came in a position of leadership who truly wanted to hear people out. He you know, it was not just somebody who was checking the box to say, I did a listening tour with, you know, everybody who now reports under me and I'm going to check the box, because his reaction was like, I really like that. I really like that idea. I think there is potential. And he's like, let's make it happen.
So what recommendations could you give to listeners about if they're in an organization, either as a leader or as a subordinate, you know, as to how you can go from that kind of mess that you lived in for a while that was doing really good work, but there was no formal structure about it?
Yeah, and I think I would say that as simple as it was when I was articulating that thought to him, I had a vision that was more elaborate than that. But I gotta say, I didn't have it fully baked. I really didn't. Because when he said, okay, let's make that happen, the first thought in my mind was like, shoot, now what? I came in here, I shared this idea, and now he's like, let's make it happen. And I'm like, okay, now I'm like, how am I gonna make that happen? But I would say, start with that vision. And I would say, don't be shy about that vision. If you have the opportunity to fully think about what you want the destination to be, spend some time with that. Because that's what I did. After he said, okay, let's make it happen. And I knew there were some nuances that would have to be navigated immediately, even with my, you know, immediate boss at the time, right? Mind you, I was pitching this to the person who was two levels above me, right? And I knew that. But for me, when he said, let's make it happen, let's talk more about it, my first thing was to go back and really think it through, right? And that was important mm-hmm. to me, to really define the vision. And I would say, don't hold back, because it's going to look and it's going to sound very ambitious and very unachievable. And I would say, don't let that discourage you. Because if you were to have this conversation in 2014 and 15, and somebody were to tell me that this team in 3 or 4 years is going to look like this, I would say not in a million years. So I would say, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of that vision establishment.
Okay. And so the vision really was taking that sometimes included at the table, where sometimes you might get to get input, to people feeling really they had to fight back if something culturally inappropriate was going to be done, to say, just no, we can't do that. It wouldn't be appropriate. To now saying, okay, we're included, we're listened to, and this is where we belong.
Yes. So the vision was really to be global communications. The vision was not to be language services anymore, not to be just there as from a serving perspective, even though we take very humble pride in being able to serve the organization overall. Right. The vision was, the ambition was, how can we be truly strategic partners that are not an afterthought in communications, that are part of the communications vision overall and strategy overall, not just something that will check the box. Then we say we do things in these many languages. How great, look at us.
Okay, interesting. So for years you dabbled around in the craziness. Now you set the vision. So what recommendations after a business leader sets the vision, what recommendations would you have for somebody to move to the next step? Like, what's the checklist?
Oh, I would say get to work. And I don't say that lightly. It's get to planning. And for me, I realized then that it was a once in my career, probably, type of opportunity. That's the thought that I had. You know, here you are in this crossroads and you're pitching an idea. I was scared. I was very scared, because I'm like, okay, so now how are we going to really bring this to life? Because it is a very tall order. It's a very ambitious goal. But you have to start. I think the next step was to start with that small first step, right? You're not going to conquer everything overnight. Even today, that's an ongoing thing. That vision has not gone away. That's still the vision that guides us overall, so we are able to continue doing what we do today. But I would say, take a step back and brainstorm ideas of how you can get there. And the way I did that was to reach out to some key players that could help me. And one very important key player at the time was our colleagues in our human resources department. Because I went to them and I'm like, okay, we think we have a thought about a reorg for this team. But mind you, this is not just a reorg. It's not just talking about, you know, a structure change, because many people see a reorg in that. This is really a transformation. So the leadership, my boss at the time, my peer manager at the time, and David, who is still our chief communications officer, we worked with HR, and HR said, okay, it is a big thing, so let's get somebody to help you, you know, guide some of this pattern. And it was really that. It was getting together, and it was literally tracing a journey of like, what are the things that we want to accomplish to get to this vision, right? What does it look like? What are the things that we do today? What are the things that we want to do tomorrow? And what are the milestones? What are the paths that we have to take to get to that stage?
What were some of the things you had to do? Because here I am as a business owner. You know, I've got business coming in from a few different countries. I'm doing everything all in English. I hear that if I translate, I might get more business. So I set a vision of doing global communications. So now it's there. I got some buy-in from people, but what are the steps I need to do to bring people along?
Yeah, I think what one of the things there is to look at the operational side of things. If I'm a business, I'm looking at the operational side of things and say, if part of the vision means that the team will create original content to place in social media, or to create original content in languages that will exist just in Japanese or just in Portuguese because that content makes sense to that market, instead of having everything be in English plus the other languages, right? To check that box. So again, so if one of the things that we want to accomplish that's part of that vision is to create content in languages originally without necessarily a source text, my question would be, who can do that, right? What are the skills that we need? And that was one of the things that we took as a next step is to work with the team, right? One of the things that was very important to me is look at talent and utilize the talent that we had. You know, in many of these transitions and that transformations or reorgs that we hear overall, people look at, you know, who is in, who is out, right? We have the staff. We many times let people go, bring new people in, and we call it a day. We check the box and move on. I didn't want to approach things that way. For me, it was very crucial to preserve and capitalize on the talents that we had. So part of that journey was, you know, again, looking at what are the things that we need. So, for example, we started tracking, creating tracks, right, or steps. So one of them was technology, right? We knew that, for example, the team was very much buried in content, right? Volume was an issue. So if they were spending pretty much 90% of their time translating things, that wouldn't leave them time to create content, right? Which was one of the things that we wanted them to do. So we thought, okay, what are the things that we can do to improve, to make it better for them? So we recognize, for example, technology is one track that we need to keep an eye on. How we're going to deal with technology, or how we're going to have technology help us in a way or another. Another one was people, right? We have this staff, we have these very talented folks. How do we encourage them and empower them and enable them to do these other things that we're asking them to do, right? So those were two main tracks that we had in terms of setting the paths down this journey.
Okay, so it's interesting. So you really had to look at what you were going to translate, what you were going to create, the who could do it, and then how were you going to facilitate through technology?
Right.
Okay.
So it's interesting. We then created a journey. We created milestones. Sorry, I cut you off.
Okay. Yeah, no, I've just wrote a book on global marketing. It's at the publisher. And as I'm listening to you talk, that's exactly the framework that I, you know, what content, who can do it, and how or what's the process you're going to go through. Okay. So this was your new boss, would you say David is his name?
Correct. He's our chief communications officer.
What's his name, David?
David Alexander.
David Alexander, hats off to you because it sounds like he came in and did a good job. So he came in 2015. You guys sat down and made a strategy. That's pushing you off now into 2016?
Correct. So in 2016... In the beginning of 2016, we gathered, again, worked very close with our folks in human resource at the time, we're now people and talent folks, and we created that journey. We worked with the team and we said, okay, what are the things that we need to accomplish? And we had a full week of meetings, every day, 2-hour meetings for 5 days that we looked at different aspects of this journey. So one of them was, okay, how do we handle volume, right? How do we do that? So we spent a lot of time talking about that with the team. So for me, that was very important. The team had to be hands-on to really help us develop this plan, right? So we created that journey of 2 years. We said at one point, okay, it would be great to say that in 24 months, we're going to create some impactful change to this team. And we created milestones for every 6 months that it would come in, get together and check on the things that we wanted to accomplish. So we went to work from those tracks, and we started looking at technology. We started looking at processes. We started looking at professional development, which was really important to help the team get where they needed to be. We started to look at processes to outsource, right? At the time, one of the things that I realized, that we all realized, was that, well, we have to rely more in outsourcing. We have a budget for outsourcing. One of the things that we found out is that we had budget for outsourcing, but that budget was not being fully utilized. A lot of things were still being done in-house. So that was one of the things that we looked at. Okay, how can we leverage more of that the resources that we have externally? So we went down that path in different directions. And eventually, one of the key turning points for us was later in 2016, when we decided that in order to invest in technology, we had another obstacle to overcome, which is, how do you convince people that getting technology to your team is a good investment?
Okay, so let me step back a little bit. Sure. In 2016, you lay out the journey, you know it's going to be 2 years. So from 2016 to 2018, you're really making the plan for level three of how are we going to do it so it's more efficient. Correct. But to get to level four, where it's optimized, you've got to get buy-in from the team to put that technology in to help optimize this journey. So how long did it take you to do that? Was that part of the 2-year plan, or was that?
It was part of the 2-year plan. Yeah. So in 2016, okay. So when we looked at technology, and again, like I said, we were moving in different tracks, right? So one of the things that we were doing was like investing in professional development, right? Training the team in content writing and social media management, social media strategy, because that was one of the things that was very important to us. We started connecting the teams with our regional magazines. Okay, so we defined some roles that we had folks in the team that would connect with our regional magazines to curate content, to exchange content. And when it came to technology, one of the things that was very important to us, because again, we kept making a pitch in the past for new technology, but it kept falling off the list, right? So we said, okay, we have to approach this. We have to change the strategy. We have to approach not just by saying we need this because technology is this shiny thing that's going to solve our problems, but let's take a step back and really look at our processes. That was very important to us. So we took upon ourselves, the leadership at the time. At that point, I was the manager of global communications, and I had regional leads for each of the regions that we were working on. We had a lead for our global content team, which was the English, global English channel that we had and team. So I worked with that leadership to say, okay, we know we want new technology. We know we need a new workflow system, but let's take a step back and really look at our processes. So we took upon ourselves to really map out our processes end to end, to really identify everything that we lived in as is, right?
Okay. So you wanted to do the technology, but you had to map out the processes before you could get the buy-in for the technology.
Correct.
So because our putting the processes in took you through level three.
Correct. Because then we mapped everything, right? So basically, and it was not just around, it was actually even, we worked very closely, for example, with the design team, right? To do desktop publishing and layout. So it was one thing that even for us, it was not only then our team, we brought along the design team with us to say, okay, if you're going to invest in technology, if you're going to have a new tool, it's going to impact this team directly because they're part of our workflows. So we brought, so global communications, the regional teams, the copy editing. So we brought localization, copy editing, interpretation, and design functions. We mapped all the processes. And we spent probably 9 months meeting 3 times a week for an hour or so to map everything out.
How long? 9 months?
Pretty much 9 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That level sets for people who are thinking about doing this. It's not an easy process.
Not at all. And of course, as you can imagine, and again, at the time, you know, we're like, you know, we went kind of rogue, right? Generally, something like this, if it is an enterprise project, we would get a project manager from the organization, right? That will help us walk through. But we're like, we can't wait. We have to do this. We have to make our case. Let's do it ourselves.
Wow, good for you. Because that's a process thinking can be very difficult.
Yes.
But so important.
It is. And for me, it was like, okay, I remember something vaguely from my college days about processes and all that. So for me, it was back to learning, right? I did a lot of research, did a lot of courses online, a lot of reading, and we're able to map everything. So our as is. So we mapped under the main functions that we had. And for each function, we created, and that's a document that I still have.
You said you did a lot of research and reading. Are there any process documents or reading or resources that you'd recommend for people on how to build out a process?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
communications.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things that really helped him was to look at the basics, right? And that was very important to me. I knew we didn't have a lot of time to really dig deep. So I looked at, you know, some basic, you know, leadership books and basic strategy books and operation management books, and looked at, you know, Harvard Business Review and did some research on some tools that existed out there. There's a lot of sites out there that offer this, you know, that offer free tools, you know, to help you map out strategy or map out a plan, you know, from Gantt chart to, you know, you name it, Excel sheets that can help you accomplish a lot. So I did a lot of research on that, and I kind of, you know, went and started, you know, creating my own library of tools and points of reference. And from that experience, we were really able to map everything out, right? And of course, not surprisingly, when we gathered the leadership in the room and we said, okay, we know things get done, we know they get done fairly well, but if you were to ask here what it takes to move this ball from A to B, from B to C, sure enough, people who were in the same teams would give different answers, right? So everybody had their own processes. Everybody did what worked for them, right? They had found their own workarounds around frustrations of technology. They had found their own free tools out there for, you know, machine translation or translation memory. And so we mapped everything out. So one of the first realizations we had, so we had this like, okay, what are the findings that we have for each of the functions that we were looking into? So for example, for localization, one of the first findings that we had, surprise, surprise, was that we don't have guidelines out there. We complain that people think of us as last minute and they don't plan enough. But guess what? They don't know how long it takes to get things done because we don't have that documented anywhere.
Interesting.
So we have a
formula for how long it takes to get something translated. But it sounds like you put a process around it. So what happens now when somebody says, how long is this going to take translated? How do you respond to that?
Now we have guidelines documented that we refer people to. So we just last week, it was our employee learning week, which was one of the strategies, tactics that we use, is we always take part of that. This year was virtual. But we had a session, like an open house, to invite colleagues to come and say, you know, learn what's new about global communications and design. And so we always point people to our guidelines. We have a portal page, our internal portal page, that we have our guidelines there. So our guidelines explain the whole process, which was one of the findings of this whole experience, was to write and document guidelines on how to work with us, right? How to prep your files, what kinds of files you can submit, you can't submit, how to submit something if there are changes. And this document includes a table that shows you how long things will take based on how many words, the type of work. And so that was like one of the first realizations that we had was, well, guess what? We complain that they don't know how to work with us, but we're not telling them how to work with us. So look at us, just sitting here
complaining. Give me a feel for how long, you know, if I submit a 4,000 word document about an initiative that our local chapter in Uruguay did. How long would it take to translate?
It will be probably 2 weeks. Yeah.
So if it's but how did you get, how did you get to that 2 weeks?
So basically that's how we work, right? So what we did is we also looked into our volume, right? And we look into our volume and we do some math that we say, okay, you know, generally our standard turnaround time is 5 business days for things that are up to 1,000 words, you know? And after that, so there are different tiers based on the type of content and all that. So, and it's a system that we had actually something that's, again, it's funny, right? Because we used that very informally. As people would submit something, somebody who was triaging requests would say, you know what, we're not going to make it. We have to contact this person and say, we're not going to make it because this is too long. This takes too long. So we had those things kind of as an internalized processes and procedures, but they were nowhere to be found. So I'm like, how do you expect people to know how long it takes and plan if we never told them that, right? So for us, it was a matter of documenting. It was like turning on the lights, right? So that's what why it was so important for us to look at processes, because the tactic for us was, okay, these are workflows. These are the as-is, right? This is how long things take. And at the end of that experience, we had somebody from the strategy team who came and helped us map, and she put everything into an actual, you know, workflows visually. And what we did then, we looked at every opportunity that we had in those workflows to either eliminate a step or improve a step. And the way we approached this was, okay, how can we eliminate or improve a step because it has to do with processes improvements that we can put in place? Mm-hmm. And how can we eliminate or expedite a step if we use technology? And we color coded the workflow. So when we were to make a case, we said, okay, we want technology, but we just don't want technology because it's going to help us. Here's our homework. Technology is very important, but we pledge that we're also going to look and improve our processes, because technology doesn't run processes, people do.
Right.
So we make a pledge that was really telling the full story. For us, that was very important, not to just say, using machine translation is going to gain me this many dollars, right? Because that's what happens, right? When people come, and all due respect to folks in technology out there, but when technology folks in sales come and talk to you, they're like, oh, you know how much money you're going to save if you use this, you know, translation memory. Great. It is a very important point, but it doesn't tell me the whole story. That's why
for us, it's let's dig a little deeper. And well, first on turnaround time, it's very interesting that I think our turnaround time would match yours. Because if somebody says, how long is this going to take? We say our general formula is for 1,000 words, add, you know, assume 3 to 5 days, because we get the project in, we can analyze it, ask any questions and get it back to you to make sure it's quality. And then after that, we'll say, if it's a larger project, allow 1,000 words per day. Now, a translator can work faster than that, but you've got to get all the process in. So that sounds like it matches yours. Mm-hmm. Pretty similar.
Very similar, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so now you have talked about machine translation and you've talked about translation memory. So translation memory is when you translate something as a human, you put it in, it keeps a memory, you translate the same thing, it's going to pull it up. Okay, it's a tool that translators use. Now, machine translation is like a Google Translate. Tell me, how are you using that? Because you've mentioned it a few times. Yeah.
Yes, and that was a thing for us, right? We had to, as part of our journey, was to, how do we implement technology to help us save time? And that saving time was really beyond because we're going to be able to turn around more words, right? For us, there was that aspect. But remember that we were in a bigger mission. We have a bigger vision that we want this team in-house to be doing other things other than just translate. So we needed to free up their time. So it was very interesting because, again, as part of our findings from this process and workflow review that we did, we came out with four main recommendations. So we said, okay, we're going to spend this time mapping everything out. We're going to put this report together. And then from this report, we're going to make four major recommendations. One of the recommendations was to apply process improvements for all the opportunities that we had identified in this exercise, right? So that was like apply process improvement. That was number one. Number two was acquire a new workflow management system, because ours was beyond broken. There was no report functionality anymore. It had been broken down. The people who had developed this in 2005 had left the organization. So the second recommendation was, we need a new management system, because the volume, we can't manage these many thousands of projects a year without a good management system. Mm-hmm. The third main recommendation was to document and provide clear guidelines on how to work with us. Mm-hmm. That was the third one. And the fourth one was to implement machine translation and translation memory to help alleviate time and expedite turnaround and efforts in the internal team. So we came up, again, as I told you, we're telling that full story, right? Technology was a part of that. So we came with those four recommendations. And at the time, if you recall, we were not using translation memory. We didn't have one that was purchased and everybody was using. We had people at random at the team using some machine translation, like Google Translate out there that was free. There's some few other versions. Some people were like, you know what? If I do this for this type of content, it will actually help me, right? I'll gain some time. So people were doing that as individual initiatives versus part of the system, part of our process, you know. So that's when we, again, from that recommendation, we made the pitch to then, okay, look into, first and foremost was the workflow management system. That was our first priority. And then secondarily, look into translation memory. And then at third point, we would say, look into machine translation that we can rely on.
So at this point, what content do you authorize to be translated by a machine?
So at that point, it was, and to this day, that's how we operate. One of the things about our teams is that our teams, you know, who are actually doing the work day in and day out, they have autonomy to decide, to make that call. They know.
Really?
Yeah, they know, and they work with their team leads, with their managers to say, you know, this is a good, you know, in the beginning, at that stage, right? At that stage, it was very informal. People would say, yeah, maybe this can be done this way. Maybe that can be done with machine translation. And it's very interesting because there was a lot of resistance within the team to use machine translation because They were like, we don't need it. We're fine without it. And it was interesting because one of the first things we did in the professional development was to train everybody in post-editing, right? They didn't know what it was. Post-editing, what is this thing called post-editing? So it was really to kind of help people understand the benefits. It's almost like we had to sell to them that by using these tools, your life is going to be easier. Now, it might be a little complicated in the beginning. There's a little learning curve there, but I promise your life is going to be better. So at that stage,
yeah, we've had clients come to us saying, do you do human translation? And they're trying to say with cultural adaptation, you know, and they're trying to say, and they said that they hired companies that used machine translation with post-editing and the quality wasn't good enough. Mm-hmm. And so they didn't even know that was a thing until they got the quality back, learned that that's what it was. So now they're struggling to ask for human translation with cultural adaptation. Yeah.
So for us, I think it was really important then to have that conversation, right? So when we came time to say, okay, now we're putting this as a recommendation. So now we have to talk about how we're going to do that. And for us, it was really important to say, you know, it's not a free for all, not every type of content goes through machine translation, right? So that was like when, okay, now as a team, let's have that conversation. Let's really learn together about what content segmentation means, right? So we started to decide, okay, so one of the things that the team decided was, for example, content that is generally from a source language into English. Generally, that type of content, most of the time, it's because somebody in the building, some staff, needs to get a gist of what that content means, right? That content is not going to be made public. That content's not going to see the light of day out there. So that's a good candidate for machine translation, right? So the machine does the heavy lifting, and then we come and post-edit it, clean it up, and off it goes, right? So some legal documents, for example, that we know are going to be just for reference, just so people know, and you know, they're not going to be used in court, or they're not going to really be used. It's just for people to get an idea of what it means. So that's a good candidate for a machine translation. Something else that we work with is, for example, we haven't been able to make a turn yet in implementing machine translation to certain elements of our web presence. We haven't been able to do that as well. Mm-hmm. Yet, but we're working on it. But that's one candidate. So, for example, grants applications, right? So people apply, clubs apply for grants around the world. So that's another example of there is a system that they go in and they apply for grants. They write in their own language, and then folks from our grants team needs to understand that. So that's a good candidate, right? So into English, we translate those grants application into. With machine translation, we do a quick post editing, we send it to the team. So we started identifying. Okay.
So you know. This is fantastic, because that's, I heard you saying machine translation. All I could hear is somebody who's new to this whole process going, well, they're using machine translation, but you have clearly defined that it's just translation to be used for internal use only. It's nothing that's going to cause any liability or limit your members.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So Patrick, we have about 5 minutes left, and you're just such a wealth of information. And I think you used to own a language translation company, didn't you?
I had a language. Yeah, it was mostly classes, but I had a language company in Brazil. Back in, oh my gosh, so many years now. And we did some work for translation as well. But mostly it was like classes that would give to companies. But we had a wing of our company that was an LSP, basically.
Okay. So now you had the agency side of it, and you've got large company side of it. So you understand what, you know, small and mid-sized companies without a global communications director, the things they're struggling with. What would be, you know, the top three or five problems to watch out for as you're going through this, or as you're trying to become a global communicator?
I think one of the main things there is, which I learned and I went back to look and study again and refresh myself on, was on change management. Every time we propose or we envision something that's different. And for us, it was really important when we had that conversation in 2015, it was really important to be of impact. We didn't want to be just something that we checked that box and moved on. That's why it took a lot of time and effort. So with that, change management was crucial. So I would say don't underestimate the steps of change, and don't underestimate how messy change can be, because it will be messy, but it's worth it. I promise it's worth it. So that's, I think, one of the problems there. I think sometimes people have great ideas, great vision, and they have great strategy, but they don't take many times the aspects of managing change and what that means, right? To all those impacted, especially people, because again, I would always say, you might have the brightest idea in the world, but you know, the right technology, the shiny tools, but without the right people in place, you really don't get far. So I think ignoring the change management aspects can be a problem. Mm-hmm. And I would also say that another problem that I see, or a challenge that I see, is really working with stakeholders, right? How to convince the stakeholders that what you're pitching is worth investing their time, energy, financial resources, because many people will just say, you know what, it's working out. Why do we need to change? Why do we need to come up with something like that, right? It works, right? People, is work getting done? Yeah, so let's just move on. You know, I'm originally from Brazil, and there is a say that, you know, you don't change the team that's winning, right? So if a team is winning, you don't change the players in that team. And a lot of people have that as their mantra. You know, if it's like, it's the whole, if it's not broken, right, why fix it? So and many times that becomes a challenge, because how do you convince, how do you work with stakeholders? And those are key. And I think I've seen and I've tried, because again, you know, we're very fortunate to work with our chief communications officer to be that big champion and advocate for us. But of course, we need to work with him to convince others, right? When you talk about technology, you have to convince the chief of IT, right? Our CEO was one of the first people that we went before and actually pitched this idea of how we wanted this team to be. So, you know, we had a meeting with him very early on before we even started implementing any of this. We went before him and made a mm-hmm. pitch. So, and again, you have to be willing to, you have to have thick skin to hear challenging questions, because people will challenge your vision. And to me, that's a driving force. Personally, I like the idea of being challenged. I like the idea of finding solutions. I think that's important. And I think, again, the third one, if I were to say in terms of problem or challenge, is don't underestimate process. You know, through this whole journey, some people, I've become to be known as the process guy. And it's very funny, because I learned to enjoy process. I was somebody who, you know, I'm Brazilian. I'm very free-spirited in many ways. but I like order. It's funny, because I go to Brazil nowadays and my family tells me that I'm too Americanized in the way I approach things. But again, I learned to enjoy process, and it took me a while, because it took me to truly understand how process can help, right? Many people will say, you know, one of the groups that we have is a design group, right? Many people say, well, you can't put process around creative. I'm like, oh, watch me, you know, because you can. And I think it's taking that time to think about process. And I often say, you know, I love process, and I'm the first one to say, let's break the process, because we need to, right? You need to have process in place in order to break when you need to break to get where you need. You know, you don't want to be, you know, you don't want to be stiff because of process, right? You don't want to be tied because of process, but it's important to have that. And that doesn't happen overnight. So I would say, again, you know, change management, convincing your stakeholders, and looking at process with affection, I would say, is important.
Okay, so now I'm going to turn to a couple of quick personal questions. The first I always like to ask, what's your favorite foreign word?
Well, being Brazilian, and I think a lot of Brazilians probably will say the same thing, I do like the word saudade in Portuguese, which is this word that many people say only exists in Portuguese, but it's not true. There is its version in other languages. It's this sense of longing, this melancholy in a way. It's kind of, you know, missing on steroids. It's a very deep word. And especially this year for me, you know, not being able, having been living in the U.S. now for 16 years, this is the very first year that I haven't made to Brazil because of the pandemic. So that word, that longing of my family and some friends, and that's very present in my life these days. So I like that word, saudade.
Saudade. Yes, that is a good one. I think that is the word of the year for 2020. All right. Your favorite vacation. What's been your favorite vacation?
I love traveling. I love India. Every time I have a chance to go back to India, I had the great opportunity and I was fortunate enough to spend some time and live there for a while. So every time I get a chance to go there, I feel like I'm home. So I love India.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing your journey. with us today. It's your wealth of knowledge and your memory is amazing to remember through all these years, all the details that you were able to share. So thank you, Patrick.
Thank you so much, Wendy. It was a pleasure to be here, and I look forward to hearing from you and your listeners. And anytime you can find me on LinkedIn or out there, I'll be more than happy to share more thoughts and ideas and learn, because I love learning all the time.
Okay, so LinkedIn is the best place to reach you, and you can find him at Patrick Nunes, N-U-N-E-S, and he's at Rotary International. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, so it's interesting. I appreciate you listening, and I ask you, if you like this episode, to share it with somebody or give us a 5-star rating. If it's not 5 stars, certainly reach out to me and tell me how I can improve, because I know Patrick can improve. And I think from this episode, it was really interesting to hear that his, you know, top 3 suggestions align with a book that I'm reading and we're implementing in our company right now, which is called Traction. And 3 of the things you focus on is vision, people, and process. And he talked a lot about that as he was going through his. And his company is large. He has a lot of internal resources, yet a translation agency, a good one, will work with you to help set up those processes and get buy-in and figure out how to meet your goals and your strategy. So thanks for listening, and look forward to talking to you next time.
That's a wrap for this session. A big thanks to you for listening to the Global Marketing Show. Hope you had just as much fun as I did. New sessions launch weekly on all places you find podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google Play, and of course on our website. If you know someone interested in this topic, please tell them about us. Au revoir for now.